Whoever said less is more hasn't heard my laugh.
Having me as a friend is more fun than a barrel of monkey pox.
That was a delayed. It took me a second because I thought you were just going to say monkey and I was going to be like, it's a plural. It's Damon. It's an S there. You guys, it's Annie's Girls. It's episode 329. And here's the fucking deal. Okay. My co-host, OG of the AG, who I will introduce momentarily, so pretend you don't know who's on the pod. We recorded a 17-hour Annie's Girls last week. Then we recorded an hour-plus Patreon, which gets Trey's... we'll pretend that was good French. Intense on the AG Patreon, hour plus. You can access that now. And then we send voice notes. So the guest co-host who you might have heard on the Patreon, which I just mentioned it on AG last week, is back because I know that this person, this guest, has some thoughts on Atlanta and I need us to talk about them. You know him as writer, producer, co-host of the amazing podcast. You might know her from Welcome Back to the Pod you were just on truly days ago. I'm so thrilled to have you, Damian Bellino, episode, I don't know if I said it, 329. Damian, welcome back.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. What a treat it is to be back here so soon. And yeah, we were sending voice notes about Atlanta, and I think we were actually really, like, we were generous with our time with Atlanta on the last episode. I think I was, you know, again, drawing parallels, like, trying to be like, this is what Atlanta's doing correct and what Beverly Hills is not doing correct, et cetera, et cetera. But then this episode, this week, I thought was very, it wasn't like, I was gonna say life-changing. That's not the word I mean. It was just, like, it did make me feel like, okay, like, stalled the season for me in a way. So I'm anxious to chat about it. Really excited to hear your thoughts.
So I think you said that something along those lines to me in a voice note along the lines of like, it wasn't great. Maybe that wasn't quite literally what you said, but I was actually kind of charmed by it. And I just rewatched it. I know I just rewatched it again and watched the after show again to be like, was I mistaken when I watched this episode? And I was charmed by it a second time.
Okay. I mean, I'm into that. I think that, I mean, if I can just dive in, I feel like Kenya and Marlo's face-off, quite literally for me as the viewer, felt like production paused and they were in the driveway for however long. I was into the robot voice telling us like an hour and a half.
I was into the robot voice.
But it was like the production stalled, but the episode had to continue. And so therefore we were watching, and I thought that, and I think we talked about this already in voice notes, but that like almost having producers come in maybe for me would have felt like it was more active. I just felt like we were watching a total argument about production, because I, on one hand, totally understand Marlo's point of view, which is like, you're on this girl's trip. This is my trip, aka I was in charge of talking to the line producer to like make this trip happen. And you know that, like, this is what we do on trips. You stay in the house. Like, please stop undermining the show and the rest of us and acting like you can't get a sitter, et cetera, et cetera. And I was, like, on board. And I'm very into my girl Candy telling Kenya so much. But then, of course, like, the flip side of it is, like, Marlo, over the last four-plus episodes, has been gunning for Kenya as usual. But, you know, does take the low blow. And so I understood her being like, you're not going to dictate how I'm going to do this trip. But I just felt like the whole fight was about the show. And that's when I was like, I was watching that sort of, what do they call it, a standoff in like a Western, where neither of them would budge from their point of view. And I was like, ladies. And then it's like, then Monietta gets her first confessional to be like, I just want us to feel like we should. And I was kind of into it. I was like, I'm not sure Monietta has the personality for this, but I was sort of into her first confessional being like, I want to say something, but I don't know either of them that well. But like, what the fuck are we doing? And it was like, to me, I was like, what the fuck are we doing? And I don't know. I'll pause it there. I have some more things to say, but I'm curious, like, what you thought of that standoff.
Well, I mean, I feel like the question is, what the fuck are they doing in the sense of, is this a fight about control of who's going to be allowed to film, control of the narrative? It's the tension of these women who obviously don't like each other being forced to film, and Marlo thinking she has the upper hand because she's the host. Yeah. I mean, there were so many layers and aspects to the fight and to how these women trigger each other that I found really kind of interesting. But the first question I would kind of pose is, why was Marlo in a position? Was Marlo aware that she couldn't technically prohibit someone from participating on a cast trip if they wanted to attend and didn't want to stay with her? Like, was she in a position to say, you don't have authority to join this trip unless you stay in the house? Like, the mechanics of the technical plus the friendship plus the personality are fascinating to me.
I feel like I understood Marlo's point of view from, like, a logistical point of view, because she was like, you are trying to act like you're above me, and by mm-hmm. not staying here, therefore you're not engaging. And I think that even though I, like, do think that Marlo goes low, and I do think that she guns for Kenya, and I think also is gunning for Candy in other ways this season, I do think that, like, the premise of the show is to engage and to have conflict and then resolve. And Kenya sort of saying, like, I refuse to. Like, I don't, like, walk in and I'm going to, like, say hello as I walk by you. Like, to me, it's clear what's happening. Now, maybe she didn't want to start that early. Maybe she wanted to wait till they got to the thing. Like, maybe she wanted her and Marlo to get through the activity and pull it aside. Like, I get it. I understand. But I felt like there is an inability. Like, they are both. I don't think that Marlo is unwilling to hear Kenya out. I think that that's what's annoying, is, like, I think Kenya is unwilling to hear Marlo out. Now, maybe that's because she thinks that she has already wronged her enough times. Like, you know, it's like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame, whatever the expression is. Like, maybe she's mm-hmm. like, fool me 700 times. Like, I don't need to do this. But again, that is the conceit of the show. So it becomes one of those things for me where it's like, I get that Marlo's being awful, but you can't sort of just, like, disengage from filming, which is, I thought, what happened for an hour and a half, as the robot voice told us. And then it's like, we're watching the, like, some of the women on a trampoline, and I'm like, what is this? and then my girl Drew does that thing that she does where it's like, she's got props. Drew is having an excellent sophomore season, except, like, she's continuing to be embarrassing, which I think is serving her. Like, we need her at this point. She's shown her value, which is, like, she's an embarrassing tryhard who's, like, funny because she's a little embarrassing. But, like, she brought props, and, like, everyone, including, like, Andy and Candy on the Watch What Happens Live, were like, what? Like, why does she have the props? And it's like she did such a good job with the autograph last season, so now she's, like, always ready for a prop. And it's like, she got it one good time, and every other time since then, she brought a wig to that Christmas party, and it was, like, embarrassing and didn't make any sense. It's like, I appreciate what Drew is bringing, because she is adding a flavor to Atlanta that I'm not sure we've ever had, but certainly had this type of person on other franchises where it's like the bone throwing. It's like she, like, really thought she schooled Fatum. And I was like, Fatum knows that she's there to be a chaos agent. You are embarrassing because you're trying too hard to fight her opposed to just, like, literally ignoring her, which I guess is what Kenya's doing to Marlo. You know what I mean? Like, Kenya's just, like, icing Marlo out, like, not engaging. I don't know. And now I'm not contradicting myself because I want Drew to do what Kenya's doing, but I want Kenya to engage with Marlo. So I don't know. What do you think? Like, was it annoying to you that Kenya is unwilling to talk to Marlo?
I think it was, but I kind of circle back to the idea of how does the threat work? I can't totally let that mouse go because I find that fascinating. It's something I talked about with friend of the pod, Dylan Hafer, on his podcast, mentioned it all, because we were talking about Atlanta and talking about the fact that with contracts these days, they have kind of shifted in many ways from a season long, this is your number, XYZ, to getting paid per episode. And so this gets into a weird gray area. Oh, interesting.
That's how they get paid on.
I don't know about Atlanta specifically, but that's certainly the shift that's happened on New York and on other franchises, because these women were refusing to film with, in many franchises, were refusing to film with each other. And this is the way around it. And I think also the way around tightening the budget and tightening some ballooning salaries was to pay people according to the number of episodes.
Oh yeah, I remember when that happened with Sonia and Lou a season with New York, and like Dorinda didn't invite Sonia to a trip, and it was like clearly, again, it was a fight about money and about the show.
Right, which is something that Sonia addressed and brought up and dropped into conversation over the course of seasons to follow, because she remained upset. It was the unspoken tension of Dorinda saying the trip to the Berkshires wouldn't be healthy for you. It's only one night. Don't worry about it. And Sonia saying, but I need to be there to film. Otherwise, I won't get paid. And it was the conversation they couldn't actually have, but were trying to have without using that phrase. And with
a lot of money for her. It's probably like $20,000 that she probably gets paid per episode 100%. Or something.
Absolutely. It's a significant piece of cash. And like, I'm thinking about that watching this episode, because I'm thinking, is Marlo, regardless of whether or not, which we can and should talk about, like regardless of how you treat the quote unquote host of a trip, noting the sensitive circumstances around why Marlo felt that she communicated why she felt like she needed a break, needed a girls trip or whatever. Can you dictate the circumstances around which a person in your cast cannot film, noting that if you decide they can't film, they could be missing out on a check? If that person wants to participate, but they refuse to stay with you, which I understand is a knock and disrespectful and passive aggressive, is that something that you can control when there potentially could be a financial impact to them? Like, and they want to be there. I just don't know that, like, how did that what was the conversation between Marlo and production? Or were they okay with kind of letting this play out because it was an interesting element of tension or narrative to the trip? That's what was kind of driving me insane and reminding me less of the Sonia Dorinda of it all, and more of Bethany and Ramona on Bethany's trip to Mexico, when there was this weird tension around, is Bethany going to invite Ramona on the trip? And eventually Ramona essentially says, it's a cast trip. I'm coming regardless of whether or not you invite me. And that's what happened.
But I think the reason that this is just speculation.
But I think that the
difference in those situations is the contract, which is that season with Sonia and Luann. I don't know how it leaked to the press that I think, was that the season that Luann was a friend of, or am I totally confused?
No, the friend of season was Don't Be All Uncool.
Okay, yes. But that season, it had been in the press that like they were in contract negotiations up until the end. And so those two women particularly were being paid episodically. Now, Ramona, to my knowledge, and of course this could also be true, but I don't think that is the standard for the Housewives. I think it is the standard for the friends of, which is why I think that Ramona said that to Bethany, because she was like, you can act like you're doing whatever in terms of having this trip, but it's like, as you said, it's a cast trip and I'm coming,
right?
Because like it's in the contract. And I don't know. I mean, I'd be interested to know the nitty gritty of all of that, even if you rewind all the way back to early seasons, like when Jill didn't go on the trip to Scary Island, but then of course she showed up. It's like, when Candy in her confessional says, I think Kenya will show up. And I'm like, well, of course she will, because this
right.
is, you guys are set to film. Unless like somebody really has, I think, a life conflict, like something's happening, they have a family wedding or they are booked to film a movie, you're usually at filming event, you're usually at the things, you know? And I feel like Beverly Hills is the one you notice most when people are like, Garcelle's not here, Rinna's not here. It's like, they're like, Rinna's in Westchester doing QVC, Garcelle's filming like American Pie. What's that movie called that she was in, the Eddie Murphy movie?
Oh, Coming to America.
Coming to America 2 or whatever.
American Pie.
But just
oh
like,
my God.
But I feel like, you know, it was interesting. Like when Candy said that, I was like, again, this just feels like a vehicle. It's like Kenya's playing is like fucking with Marlo, but like we know that she's gonna show up, right? I mean, I think so. I don't think I know what Kenya's intentions were, which I think is why it bugged me, because I don't know what she's going for, because she also, like, Marlo was like, don't show up here late and then expect to do things. Don't think you're not going to stay at the Marlo place because you don't like Marlo. And then, like, you can just go home. And then she showed up the next day in a pleasant mood early and hung out with Sanya until everyone got ready. So it felt like she was game to play and understood that she had to, which is why I just don't know why it didn't feel like it could get anywhere. And then they went and did that weird gem thing, which was literally, like, a thing you do at a gift shop at a zoo.
So we also don't call it gen mining if I don't get to see a mine. I thought I was going to go into a cave. I thought we were getting like a cave-esque experience. I was thinking in my head before the scene played, oh my God, I would have gotten like huge fake diamond, like Claire's accessories. Obviously Drew could consult on that and like hide them and like have like a fun little whatever. And then they ended up just playing with like river water or something. It was very weird. I was not into it at all. Full stop. I think it was a disappointment to everyone, but maybe also calming by how dumb it was, which maybe they needed after an hour and a half of like steam heat. But when it came to the actual environment of the trip, I don't know why. I just found it so interesting. Like I thought, you know, Inside Out or Outside In, I thought like ultimatum first in how I processed the episode. What are the parameters around Marlo thinking or knowing that she could dictate who would be allowed to film, number one. And then number two was intention. Like, what was the conversation with Kenya, understanding that this was supposed to be a quote unquote healing trip for Marlo? Because Kenya was on time because Sheree, I guess, told her, make sure you're on time to get there at 9. She literally was running to the door at 9:04. So she understood that she wanted to make herself fit within the parameters or the obstacle or the ultimatum that Marlo set. But then it was like anything but that when it came to actual interaction. Like this was someone who was seemingly working very hard to try to ignore and disregard Marlo in a way that I was like, you're lighting the match. We understand. This isn't just like taking the bigger, like,
well, and to
me, you know, like you're not, it's not even kissing the ring. You're like shitting on her doorstep.
Well, yeah. And also to me, it is like, it's passive aggressive because to me, it's like, I'm taking the high road because I'm not going to engage with you. But I know that by not engaging with you on this show where we need to interact with one another, it's going to drive you up a wall. And so I'm going to get a reaction out of you, but then I'm going to be able to say like, my hands are clean because I didn't want to do this.
Well, and also silence is not engaging. Like, that's not.
Tell me,
like,
that's my ex-boyfriend. Literally.
Tell me.
No, I just, like, I am a person. You probably know this because we have been friends and colleagues for a while. But, like, I do not do well with, like, silent treatment because, like, I feel like, and I know that some people need time to process. But, like, when you're in a relationship with me, if we're arguing and you're like, have your moment and don't engage, as my ex once said to me, you might watch my head explode. Because, like, engaging in the silent treatment and telling me to, like, have my moment to feel my emotions is like, what? Like, we need to feel these together. And I felt like Kenya acting like, I'm not going to do this. I felt like she knew exactly what she was going to get out of Marlo. And then she was going to be like, look at you. You're, like, you're the gutter. You always got to go so low. I wasn't ready. I didn't even want to do this morning. I was coming to go gem mining. You know what I mean? It's like, that to me it's like, I totally understand why Kenya thinks that Marlo's a pain in the ass and doesn't want to engage. But, again, the show. So I also then totally understand why Marlo is like, this is infuriating. Like, we have to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, silence is not neutrality.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like the way you said that.
But isn't it true? Like, I know that too. As a defense mechanism, occasionally ignorance is bliss, and I would rather ignore someone or something because I don't want to engage with it. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm processing my own stuff. then engage in a situation that might make me uncomfortable, but that's not being neutral. Like, being neutral to me, potentially, especially in a social surrounding, is like, hey, how are you? And not, hi, and then running off, or like, hi, and then saying an hour and a half later, oh, I said hi to her because I said hi to the group, or I ran around a corner. Like, giving this someone the silent treatment is not taking a higher plane of goodness or like
facts.
Godliness. Yeah. It's actually ignoring them, which can be very triggering to someone, upsetting to someone, frustrating to someone. If your trigger is in any way being minimized and someone is denying the existence of your physical presence in a room, there's no greater route to fighting than to behave in the manner that Kenya did, including, by the way, giggling and laughing and running away from this person because you don't want to engage with them. If you don't want to have a talk with them, you can say that in like a respectful, mature way. I'd rather us talk as a group, or I don't know, figure it out. It's she's the one on the trip. You're going to have a moment with her. I don't know what else to say to that. But like, to run away and then have her follow, like, what do you think is going to happen? It's because you're pretending this is a joke, but it's not actually funny. The only person who thinks it's funny is you.
Didn't this just happen on another franchise? And when I say just, I mean like within the last few months, where someone, two women had conflict and there was like an event and they like were like, hey, can we just not do this tonight? Like, can we not have the conversation that we like need to have? Can we not have it at this event? And like, they said that, and I can't remember where that was, but I remember thinking that was interesting because it wasn't like they decided, you know, we're cool now. It was just like, we're both raw right now and we don't want to ruin whatever the event was. I don't remember what the event, I can't remember what franchise it was on, but I felt like that. I feel like Kenya has taken that approach in the past where she's like with Portia, probably with Marlo in the past, maybe with Nene, where she's like, I just don't want to do this tonight. Like, we're all out here for Cynthia's wine tasting where she doesn't know anything about rosé. Let's not do this, Nene. Or like, hey, Portia, like, we can agree that we hated each other in the past, but we both have babies now. Let's not do this today. Like, we can talk about it another time. And I felt like I feel like that is one of her tactics, but I think her motivation in this particular episode or that particular scene was just kind of confusing because, like, she showed up. I know, I agree with you, though. Like, I don't know what Marlo's MO is because she can't control. She's not going to be able to, like, evict or eject Kenya from the circumstances. I don't know. Can I ask, you know, I love to try to find like parallels in other cities, and I'm curious, Marlo to me is sort of, what is the word, like the way the other women view her historically is sort of like, oh, here she is working for her check, always goes low, I don't want to do this. And I can't think of that many instances where that exists on other franchises. Like, maybe Brandy on Beverly Hills in her later seasons, maybe Kelly Dodd at some point on OC where women were like, where they thought she was going too low. But even then, I feel like those, I mean, I guess Marlo has allies, but it still feels like it feels like Marlo's history on the show is being rejected by the women who think she's doing the most for her check or for story.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, it's like she's always comes in guns a-blazing because she knows that's how to get more episodes, how to make money, and to make an impression. But now she doesn't really have to go that hard, I guess, theoretically. But she wants to make a good show. She wants to make TV. I mean, I think that seems like she's leaving this season, from what I know or what I've gleaned from social media. I mean, I don't think she's on good terms with Candy and Kenya. I'm not sure where she and Sheree stand, or she and Drew and Sanya. I don't know.
I mean, that it gets into the difficulty with Marlo when you know that someone's reaction is always going to be mean. I mean, Candy said on Speak On It this week that Marlo was saying some cruel and terrible things about Brooklyn, which we did not see.
Candy addressed. Said that.
Yeah, Candy said that.
Oh, I know. She said that. I know you sent me a blind item, but I didn't know that Candy like corroborated that story.
Yeah, she did. And I watched the clip of it where she talks about the fact that there were things that Marlo said about Brooklyn, which we didn't see evidence of in any way in the episode, which Candy herself said would have maybe explained a little bit more about how hot the temperature got, which is an interesting tactic because you reference Brandy, and this is something that you and I have spoken about one-on-one, but with the Brandy Adrian surrogacy rumor slash weaponized insult on BH 100 years ago, a lot of the plot revolved around what we didn't actually know was said, but the reaction to it. It was Brandy saying, well, here's a thing that I have, and then the women acting horrified, and then the fallout with Adrian and Paul. On Girls Trip, Brandy said something terrible referencing Russell, which the editors, as you and I have talked about, essentially bleeped in terms of like removing the actual like the trigger words.
Yeah.
Right, but they kept the beginning, the end, and the aftermath, which viewers have been able to kind of figure out. It wasn't terribly difficult that what Brandy was saying was, how can you consider your season a success when Russell, in her words, killed himself? Which is a terrible, awful thing to say. To remove entirely what Marlo said about Brooklyn, Kenya's young child, makes me wonder, when it comes to like the actual control of the edit here, did that happen to protect Kenya and Brooklyn because it was just a terrible thing? Or did that happen because Marlo is just so mean that there are only, as a housewife, there are only, she's only getting like 5 to 7 chances per season of saying things that are absolutely astronomically terrible, and this was just so bad that it would maybe, like, not to be dramatic, but like question her positioning as a full, I don't understand why it was removed, which goes into like the aspect of this fight and this relationship as it stands a little bit.
It's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that Candy corroborated it. It's interesting that they edited it out. My instinct or my guess would be that it was to protect Kenya and Brooklyn. But yeah, if it's Candy and Kenya who are talking about it happening, or Candy, who theoretically is Kenya's friend, that's right, interesting. But I would like to, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit to say that, like, Kenya does this thing where she likes to say that, like, Marlo is so low, so low, so low. But, like, Kenya did say, like, you gave your nephews away. 100%. Which was also a terrible, awful thing to say, because while that, I feel like everyone's reaction to that in the cast has been, like, Marlo, they also have recognized that it's a nuanced thing. And yes, so for Kenya to trigger a warning, weaponize the use, like, you know, to weaponize that as an insult towards Marlo, like, mm-hmm, was also a low blow. So I don't know. I don't want to butcher this writer's name, but I've never said it out loud, but Ife Ankanta, who's like does the recaps for Atlanta Vulture, talked a lot about how watching Marlo and Kenya feels, I don't think she used the word dark, but she just talked about that, like, they both have talked about their upbringings and their relationships with their mom, or their lack of their relationships with their mom. So a little bit watching this whole feud between the two of them over the last few episodes, it feels like when Kenya's using that information about James and Michael, it's like, you're no better than the people that wronged us. And when Marlo is like, you know, like, you're not wanted here if you don't do it this way, like, they're in fact and essentially like sort of like rehashing similar traumas that they both experienced, mm-hmm, which I thought was so smart and something I didn't ever think about. Like, I mean, I think I thought about how they're maybe more similar than not, but I mean, it sort of boils down to a similar parallel that we saw years ago with Nene and Kenya, who both had complicated and or non-existent, mm-hmm, relationships with their moms. You know, it's like, that shit, I mean, this isn't therapy, but like, it is, you know, Andy's Girl is a place I feel like where I like it, because I feel like it's like therapy a little bit, and that stuff like runs so deep. So it makes me sad that, I don't know, I'd love for them to be able to talk about it. Like, I don't need them to be like best friends and pretend like their besties are going to forgive each other for all of the terrible things they've said or done to each other. But the idea that it's like, we're just going to keep doing this over and over again, I don't know. It becomes I don't know. It's just not that fun. Like, it has to evolve. Even if it's just, listen, she is a fucking nightmare monster. But the thing that Ramona Singer always understood about Housewives, and I don't know that it was intentional. Maybe I think it's probably just her own tactic from the way that she has processed trauma in her life. But she just apologized and wanted to move on. And maybe because some of her castmates were maybe more emotionally intelligent or more savvy in terms of TV, they accepted it for the terms of the show. And I think that that is what's sometimes hard about situations like this, where it's like, we're at a standstill. Like, you guys just, you have to have the conversation and you need to move on. And it doesn't mean you have to be best friends, but you need to move on for the sake of story. Because also that's what makes the show interesting, is then watching them be fun and get to see it, the things that they have in common, and watch them get tipsy and dance and be silly. And then again, they're gonna unravel again, because that's what happens in life. But at least, like, we need to have that ebb and flow. We can't just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again.
But that's the thing, when you feel like someone has cut you to the core, or you feel cut to the core, yeah, cut to the quick, like, regardless of whether or not that happened, that was that person's intention, that's how you're responding to it. I think Marlo was at a 15 and was like, for her, she was thinking, I'm going to allow this person to further hurt me. They're not going to win. I'm going to take control. This is like the highest, most whatever defense explanation. And maybe it's deserved or maybe it's not. I think about it in terms of like the breakdown that must have been happening at that point and the representation of this person, where it's like, okay, we just had a tussle inside the house. They're not going to give me the respect or like basic, at a basic level. And then we introduce the idea of what both of these women have experienced, as you said, referencing other quasi similar backgrounds that we've seen on Atlanta, including Nene's. And like the idea that for Marlo at that point, just hearing the one-off comment, I guess it precedes the one-off comment. Did Kenya say the thing about her nephews before they refused to drive, or was that kind,
I think,
of
it was
in
the
between?
I think it was at the very like beginning of the argument, because it was like, Kenya, okay, can't go in that car, such and such car. And it was like, just like you left your nephews or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like at that point, it's like, if I don't win this argument, I'm taking a stand for everything. I'm taking a stand for the ways that I don't like this person and the ways that she has minimized me and disrespected me. And now she's referencing my nephews, which Marlo had also been told about in an incredibly clumsy fashion.
Marlo had been...
Yes, by Sonia.
Oh, yeah. I was into Sonia being ridiculous this episode. I was charmed by her.
I was actually charmed by her, too. And I felt like when I watched the episode the second time, I'm like, I think they're editing maybe around some of Sonia, like, trying to support Kenya. I couldn't figure out how much of Marlo interrupting Sonia's conversation and the actual conversation was edited out. But I do think that Sonia wasn't just saying like this person was talking shit. Like, I think she was trying to say a little bit there was an environment here of her sharing her own experiences that influenced that. And I think there was a little bit more of like, not neutrality, but there was a little bit more of perspective, mm-hmm, that we didn't necessarily see. But I also don't know, because it was obviously edited, the scene itself. But I just like look at the Marlo element of it all and the Kenya element of it all, knowing that these women have both had incredibly difficult childhoods, difficult relationships with their families, difficult relationships with their mothers, mm-hmm, and you're seeing them fight. And it's like, how much of this is you battling this person who you both just genuinely plain don't like each other? We get it. And how much of this is like the figurehead of this being an adult woman, a mature adult woman who's telling you that your opinion doesn't matter? Like, when it comes to like representation, the ways that sometimes our relationships with each other, like interpersonal dynamics, can sometimes trigger us as,
yeah,
adults.
Yeah.
Because we're all, like, at the end of the day, all broken kids. Mm-hmm. Like, how much of you looking at this person, especially when they're referencing loved ones in some way, with Marlo saying whatever she did about Brooklyn, with Kenya saying what she did about the nephews, like, how much of that is you looking at this person and being like, well, now I'm old enough to actually say to you, shut the fuck up, get the fuck out. Mm-hmm. You're not going to violate me in this way. You know, like,
yeah,
the boundary stuff can be very triggering, especially as we know what we do about their childhoods. And in Marlo's way, in her situation, when her childhood and family dynamic is so closely linked with her now being a caregiver, I think it's very complicated, which is why I was so entranced by the breakdown of it all, because I felt like it wasn't just a breakdown. It was like, not definitely not a breakthrough, but it was a representation, I think, regardless of whether or not they would agree. Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo. And when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth. And when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this. Violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions. Just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndysGirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com with code AndysGirls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Erin and your life and mine.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
Do you think that's too far? I mean, I just think like they're arguing about family. They're having tense arguments and conversations with their cast members about their upbringings and the experiences that they've had, which directly leads into this more heightened conflict where both of these women are like refusing to budge, quite literally leading to the fact that we had an hour and a half of cars parked in the driveway. I don't think it was simply because Kenya Hat was in an SUV. I think that there was an awful lot going on, a large part of that due to a fight for control with a little bit of understanding about why the lack of control and the addition of disrespect can be so additionally upsetting. Not incapacitating, but like blocking.
Was this the episode where Kenya talked about like it triggering her relationship with Mark, or was that like a couple weeks ago?
I think that was the last episode.
I don't know. I just think that was also illuminating, but I think if I take it down to like brass tacks, I think my question and why I felt like unsatisfied with the conflict or the episode is because I couldn't tell you what this fight is about. Like, I can't tell you what the inciting incident was, why they are at odds this moment. Like, I know that Marlo said a bunch of was it because Marlo's was like mad that Kenya was sick before? Like, is that what the root of this is for this current iteration of this feud?
I think it was the breakdown and struggle because Marlo set the standard of if you are not staying in the house and or here by breakfast, you're not allowed. Kenya showed up but then wouldn't acknowledge her.
Yeah, but there was already something going on between them before they got to whatever it was called, Blue Mountain or Blue something.
It was Kenya refusing to say hello, Marlo saying repeatedly to her, I'm getting my glam on, I'd like to take a moment with you privately. Kenya refusing to have a private conversation or frankly sort of even a group one. Kenya running off, Marlo chasing after her, then Kenya, which this moment was not caught on camera but you got seconds later, Kenya saying that essentially don't put your hands on me, you're not going to do that, XYZ. And then Kenya saying, I'm not going to have a private conversation with you. If you want to say anything to the group, to me, it'll be in front of the group, as I said, which wasn't really what she said. And then getting upset when Marlo raised her voice.
Yeah.
And then it went downhill from there. And then Marlo was like, you're not allowed to go on this activity. And Kenya was like, cool, I'll see you there because I absolutely will be joining you in the other car.
I think that what, like, my larger question isn't even about, like, the inciting, like, steps of this particular fight on this trip. But, like, they started out the season good. And then, like, I don't know, like, kind of where it went bad. Like, there was the argument where, like, Kenya probably had a COVID scare and had to, like, not film. And that started something. But it just seems like it has really swung really extreme based on nothing. I mean, I know that they have a history of not loving each other, but it just feels like it has gone so extreme, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the same question that could be raised with when did things go so terribly wrong with Marlo and Candy? I mean, who is the person to ask? I don't know that it would be Candy, who seems just as bewildered by it as anybody else.
But at this moment, they seem good enough because they were able to at least like connect at the pajama party about what was happening. I think it was the pajama party where they connected about what was happening with the nephews. And Marlo said, like, I needed a break. And Candy was like, you can't do that. But I felt like that seemed like a pin in whatever's coming. I feel like the only reason I know that they're still at odds is because we saw the mid-season trailer where I assume that Candy is telling Marlo that she will go low. If she goes low, she mm-hmm. will go lower. But mm-hmm. I feel like they seem like they put a pin in whatever was happening. Now, whether or not that was because Candy hasn't seen the episodes yet, so didn't get to see Marlo and Sheree laughing on the patio at the Jamaican cooking dinner class. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. like I'm sure that there's a lot of things to unpack at the reunion. I just think that, like, the extremes of the Marlo and Kenya stuff seems like it started from literally a molehill, as they say.
But that's ultimately...
I mean, that's Housewives, right?
But it's more than Housewives. I feel like it's specifically Marlo. Like, she gets mean. Things get heightened quick. And it doesn't help that you have someone like Kenya who is enamored with passive-aggressive moves and behavior. And... when you do that with someone like Marlo, when you constantly poke at her, there's going to be a reaction. And conversely, sometimes Marlo reacts when there's really, it's not an appropriate level of fury.
It doesn't always match the whatever.
It not only does it not, it often doesn't. And that's, I think, the question for Bravo that Bravo's had for so many years, not only like some... questions around how to, you know,
like justify share... her life as like a luxury lifestyle.
Right, right. That there have always been kind of questions around that, but also she can get really mean. And sometimes Marlo, a small dose of Marlo goes a long way, especially with reality TV, with conflict, with anything else. And now we're getting some examples of like, and I'm not saying that, you know, she wasn't provoked, but we are also getting examples this season of maybe why Marlo wasn't full-time prior, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the idea that Marlo is mean is hard, a little difficult for me because, you know, out of the aforementioned Kenya bringing up the nephews, and maybe that happened after Marlo said something about Brooklyn. I mean, who knows? But, you know, she also, like, says, like, I'm an icon, you're an ex-con. Like, that's also mean, you know what I mean? Like, the ability, mm-hmm. like, constantly remind, like, Kenya doesn't want to be reminded of her past to be weaponized against her. But then, it's like, two wrongs don't make a right, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I get the instinct to shoot low when someone goes low, or, you know, to hit low when someone goes low. But I think the idea that, like, Marlo goes too far, I don't know. I think that Kenya's matching her.
I don't see it as an even match. I think that maybe there's like a thing for me when it comes to like mean housewives. It's something that I don't have. It's definitely person specific, but like, and this is not a comparison. I'm not comparing Marlo to these people, but just to say there have been moments when housewives go particularly low. Brandy, Kelly Dodd, Dorinda, where I'm like, oof, it's, you know, so much of Housewives is about conflict and conflict resolution, but sometimes it's just a matter of making someone feel bad in such a terrible way so consistently that when you start to create that record for yourself where it's like, of course you're going to do this because you are X, you know, of course your name is so-and-so, you know, like Dorinda's going to do what Dorinda does. And it just can get kind of sad to watch. And I think that Marlo has aspects of that, like the ways that she can try to, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Hurt people. And I just think that like she's on that list, you know.
Can I pivot for a moment? Is that okay?
Please. Of course.
I'm curious what your take is on the friends of this far. I'm just curious because like it to me, like I love when new people are a part of it. And I'm curious if you kind of think they're inconsequential, if you think they're doing the most, if they're doing the least, if it's not relevant, like, cause we have both Monietta and Fatoum, who is a chaos agent who I don't know that I feel like sometimes you need an agent of chaos and Atlanta doesn't have one right now. I mean, I guess it's Marlo, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where what it comes down to, like how much chaos can this cast sustain. And I just think Fatoum is like such wild, strange, chaotic energy that all I get from her is shrieking and not a whole lot else. And it's like, I'm not going to defend Drew because I do think it's like she is a bit embarrassing. And I think sometimes like the ways that she dislikes these women is because like she ultimately doesn't like her husband. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's not really that person's fault that your husband is telling someone something and then they told somebody else who told this gal who's telling you.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I think that's kind of embarrassing. But yeah, Fatum to me is a lot. What do you, I mean, I don't totally get why she's there. I'm not quite sure. Feels like a lot of people.
My impression is that, and this is just based on nothing. This is just theory. But I think think that Atlanta and Beverly Hills, I think the idea of having more people, it's like creates more story, more stuff will happen. I also think like whether this is morbid or not, I think there is this consideration of like COVID is a thing. And when people like it's like there's bodies in the room. I think they've seen how like on OC in New York on during these COVID years, when you're filming and people get sick, then like production shuts down. It, like it gives them options to have different people in the mix, but also it just helps them move story. And it's a way for them to try out new people and see like, is there potential like other main character energy in these friends of. So like, I'm not mad at it because I do think like, I loved the pajama party when Sheree had a couple like stray friends there, including Lisa Wu and then Fatum. And I think Monietta was there as well. But then there were like even a couple other women. I was into it because I think like more bodies, just like it's funnier. You get like even just like a person in the back, like the woman at the Kenya's kid's birthday party, the white woman who told like yelled at the table for playing.
Oh my like, gosh, she was so weird.
But I
she
loved
was, like the one drinking at the beginning, and then she's like, "It's a kid's party, ma'am. Go take a nap."
But
what
I loved it
because
it like
doing?
It became
you're filming a reality TV show. This isn't Chuck E. Cheese.
It was so funny though because it like gave us a meme and it just like adds
yes,
extra,
no, it was a great moment.
Extra like variables, extra like, you know, question marks. So I'm not mad at any of the new people. I think that at this point though, like they kind of got integrated a little messy because of the way they like kind of joined mid-season. And I wonder if that's because they were like, there's not enough happening. I mean, I wonder the same thing with Sheree on Beverly Hills. Like suddenly it's like Garcelle's friend, she's like suddenly at things, and then Garcelle had COVID and it was like Sheree was with Jamie Lee Curtis, and I was like, I'm into it. It was like the best part of the episode. It made me laugh. I like her, but I was like, she's like now just integrated and we're just acting like she's been friends with these women, which like doesn't make me mad. That is the show, we accept the universe. But it just makes me think that like stuff wasn't happening on these seasons. They felt like maybe behind the scenes. Anyway, I say all of that long story short, I kind of am into Fatum being an agent of chaos just because like it's wild and like I don't know that she's earning herself like a peach, but I'm like into it. Monietta, I'm like the jury is still out because I know who she is like prior to this because she was on a show called Atlanta Exes. And I think like maybe she's boring, but also maybe there's potential for her like to be something with time because she seems like Candy was at her wedding. So whether however close they are or not, she was at her wedding. And that means to me like maybe they have some established history.
I mean, that's nice that they're friends, and I am more into her, I guess, than Fatum of the two. But like, I love a group event. I love when there are like friends of who aren't actual literal entitled friends of housewives, but actual housewives friends in attendance, because I think it can be kind of interesting.
Totally.
And I love Sheree's little party, but I just for this trip, I was like, oof, it feels like a lot. Like when Fatum arrived, I was like, maybe not this trip. I don't know. But that's also because we have the benefit of watching how terribly it's being playing out, and now knowing how quickly it all went aground, it doesn't necessarily help in that moment. I also thought Drew being like, get this bitch out of the whatever she said, I was like, we don't need you here. This is when she tries to play up, and it's like,
yeah,
okay, I get it, but then you're also just doing the barking noises because we know that you went to Petco at some point and bought yourself a dog. She doesn't even have a dog. So you were just, it's like, we're at least Aviva's leg was a part of her body, so she didn't need to bring it with her. Aside from the fact that she has the leg, you know, like it's, you brought, it's just so, and on Atlanta, when these women are like so highly skilled. It's to come in as like, but isn't it kind of great? Of Atlanta? No, it's not. Are you going to say brave?
No, I think isn't it kind of great? Like,
oh, her, I was like, geez, she's not getting the Profile and Courage Award for going to PetSmart.
When a franchise, with all respect to Candy, because I think she is important in her very own way, which is like in wealth and in like alpha confidence.
Yep.
But like when you are
alpha confidence,
when you are the city or the franchise that has Nene, Portia, Kenya, Phaedra. And then you get somebody in whatever season we're in, 12, who's like such a flop at trying to make a moment happen. I kind of love it because it's like we've had so many pros on this franchise. I mean, fucking Claudia Jordan was so fucking whip smart and funny. So the idea that like we have Drew, who's like has occasional moments where I find her to be charming and funny, but then like is also has these wonderful moments where she's embarrassing. I'm like, I love it. Like, because we don't, it's like how Tanya, is that what, Tanya, that's how we said her name? I love Tanya because she was like a different flavor of anything we've ever had on Atlanta. She was kind of a goofy dork and like had a funny laugh. And like, it was just a different type of woman. So I'm appreciating Drew a lot. I'm glad she got a second season because I think a lot of people would have advocated for her to go just because it was like, oh, because her tryhardness was maybe like embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, there's value in that. Rather than everyone can't be like a sleek, whip smart, funny, like we can't all be that. Like there needs to be other types of people in the mix because it's what creates conflict, and also it just adds a little bit of variety.
Yeah, no, I mean like variety, it's like going to a circus and thinking that the protagonist is going to be the clown. Which, unless that clown is, like, the grandma clown from Barnum and Bailey or whatever, the one who, like, truly did thread the narrative throughout the circus, which I remember as a child, it's not going to happen. So that's part of the fun, I guess, of Drew thinking that she's, like, on the same level as Sheree, because she's not on that level. So, like, the tension of, like, them fighting with each other is kind of an LOL because Sheree's looking at her and is like, who even are you? Like, no one here respects you like that. But I think that can be fun. Yeah, like the embarrassment factor of Drew is absolutely, it's kind of, and it's a nice like little element of light because she's
totally,
she went and bought herself a dog bone and is pleased with the fact that she did that and was waiting for a moment. In fact, on the after show, when she was, I think, paired with Candy, yeah, and Candy was like, you brought a prop, like, incredulous. And her response was something along the lines of, like, props, like, plural. She had more than one.
Yeah, she had multiple bones, she said.
She had multiple, wow. I mean, you know, the nice thing about a bone collector is that, like, they typically aren't literally collecting bones in the yard. It's truly information. Maybe Drew didn't really pick that up. Or maybe she thought she was honestly Carrot Top. I was like, I'm your bone collector.
Oh, my God. I'm obsessed with Carrot Top. Carrot Top reference. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's something. Hear me out. I feel like there's something similar about, like, early season Dorit to early season Drew, which is just like this, like, we're like really working. The only thing that I think is different is that Dorit came in with like an intention to do something based on the relationship that was her entrance point. And I think Drew doesn't have that. So she's operating kind of not on an island of her own, but she's not like as Drew says about Fatoum, like she's not someone's lapdog the way that Dorit was maybe LVP's. But I just think like the idea of like perpetrating a type of life, the idea of like trying to like create a moment, which is like now Dorit I love and I feel like I have respect for her and I like appreciate her for many different ways. But her first few seasons were rough because it was like the accent and like every look and like the husband who was involved in the drama and So I'm trying to appreciate those things about Drew because in four seasons she might be like super polished and I'll be like, oh, I miss old Drew when she was embarrassing and kept like dog bones in her pocket and like outed that her husband was on the bench at Rutgers playing like Division II football. Like, what position did you play at Rutgers? And he was like, oh, I was on the bench the whole time. And she was like, I'm on camera. And it was like amazing. Like, production also doesn't give a fuck. They put that in there. They don't care about protecting her, Ralph, which like you need, that's like why you need new blood on these shows because like when these women get so established, then they they get like fucking mad when that stuff happens and refuse to do shit. You need to be able to embarrass people for our entertainment. So I just want to pour one out for Drew. She's doing something good. She's doing something right.
I mean, cheers to her on that note. It's like I guess there's a little bit of like the transition from like glee to greed, of like the glee of being on the show and you're like, you'll do whatever it takes.
Absolutely. And you're just so happy, yes,
to
be there.
And then the greed of like, I need to win. I need to be number one. I need to be in the center.
I need to make the most money. Yeah. I need to be holding the thing in the center, opposed to being like, I just want to be here. I just want to be in the scenes. I just want to film with the star. And then you're like, I am one of the stars. That's interesting. I like the way you said that, the need for the greed. Can you
writer girl now and again?
I saw a Bravo account or like a meme account on my Discovery page, I think. All due respect to the account that I can't remember. That they posted something about like, we're missing somebody. Like whether that's Portia, whether it's Nene. Like we're missing somebody in this particular episode because like nothing was happening in terms of like. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of imagining like, if Portia was there, I think she would have like assembled with Marlo and like helped maybe try to communicate to Kenya about like why it's important. And I do think that Candy like is able to talk to Kenya, but Candy is sort of, I think, like less of a performative housewife than most. So I think that she's less willing to be like when she said to Marlo, like, I get your point, but can't we all get in the car and just go to the thing? Like, I appreciate that because it's real. It just doesn't always help move stuff. So I bring this up to my question to you when I was coming to record was like, I wonder if you agree. Like, do you feel like, let's take the friends out. Like, if we just take the five, I think, core housewives, like, do you feel like we're missing someone? Are we missing a Portia or a Nene or, you know, insert somebody else who maybe was or what isn't on the show?
I mean, I think so. I hadn't considered that until this moment. But I also think, like, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but I just think that, like, this season of Atlanta is like a little bit forgettable in the sense that like I'm not going to really reflect on it after this season is done necessarily, which doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying it at the moment. I just I don't think that this is like I think it's like maybe a little bit of a, it's not a reboot.
I think it is like a soft reset. I think it's kind of like, yeah, what they do with OC.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a reset. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm curious to see what will happen next season. I'm curious to see what Portia's role on Girls Trip will possibly transition into, because it seems likely that her spinoff is maybe not going to move forward with a second season, which is honestly to everybody's benefit. When it comes to like, was Portia missing versus like, could she have helped? Absolutely. And I think that's where any questions around, man, I wish I had seen a little bit more producer interaction during this negotiation, where we all understand surely that there was a negotiation taking place with the cast. I mean, I do think like Kenya was doing business calls, but also absolutely texting with producers when she was in the car at that point. Yeah. And like getting a little bit of that, especially when we saw like a flash of a producer's face, but not anything really else. I think that having somebody come in like Portia, who could have done more of a job of like less even negotiating, getting them to go to the activity, and more like, let's get into the heart of this. Sonia did what she did, maybe had good intentions. And I really, really like Sonia. She doesn't have the heft on this show yet. She's too new.
I love her.
I really enjoy her. She's got energy to me that I actually find not even bone collecting related, but like, sort of reminiscent of Sheree in the sense of like, she's just so darn likable. Mm-hmm. She really is. There's something, it's like she carries the light. And I think in some ways, Sheree does too. She just can't get a fucking handle on making good calls in business or even most recently in love, from what I'm seeing on social. But I enjoy both of them. But Sonia's just not, she doesn't have that kind of
she doesn't have that kind of cachet or like status in the group yet.
Or with us, to be honest, totally. Versus having a power weight like Portia in the mix, or somebody I would say like Portia, but there really isn't anyone like Portia who's really got some power and authority in the cast, regardless of, you know, even how Kenya and she stand, I think. how she and Kenya stand, rather. I think that, yeah, that could have been helpful. But I think it, overall, I genuinely was intrigued by the episode, I have to say. And watching it a second time, I was like, there's something about it. Because I think it taps into some dynamics that we may not be able to explore between Marlo and Kenya until potentially the reunion, possibly reminiscent of what was discussed between Kenya and Nini. And it also, for me, like, as somebody who doesn't have kids, I initially, when I heard Marlo saying, you know, like, they're going to, you know, like, I had enough, they were behaving poorly, they're going to stay with my sister, I honestly, like, understood that for Marlo, as the Munti, as someone stepping in and trying to manage this, that if she felt her kids were, like, out of control, this was like the, you know, I'm gonna threaten you, you're gonna have to stay with my sister, it's not gonna be Louis Vuitton and whatever Dior all day, it's gonna be a different experience, that it was like a sort of way of, for her, you know, saying, this is the way I'm not necessarily going to parent, but, like, you're not going to stay with all of these luxury items if you're being disrespectful, whatever was happening. I understood where she was coming from, more from that than honestly even, like, the idea of her needing a break. But when Kenya was describing on the episode and on the after show, which I think Candy did as well, just, like, without having necessarily the same experience as a child, but when Kenya was talking about her childhood and the feeling of being abandoned and what Kenya went through when she was going to live with a different grandmother, her mom's mom, I think, and when that grandmother said, you have to go back and live with the other grandmother, and her feeling and being in a position where she already had a lot of, like, instability in the family dynamics and family structure and feeling torment from that and feeling unwanted, then it kind of clicked to me more, where I was like, okay, this isn't like a normal situation in the sense that there's already instability happening. These kids have already experienced trauma. You should hold them accountable for their behavior. But, you know, to add to that potential feeling of trauma, even if it's through Marlo's understanding of parenting or Marlo's understanding of self-care, it's just maybe not appropriate, which I thought was interesting to hear, you know, because that to me was like, oh, of course, now I get it, you know.
Yeah,
I was only thinking about it through the lens of, like, my experience in childhood and not what Marlo and Kenya had to go through.
Yeah, I don't know, that's interesting. And yeah, that stuff was hard. The stuff about the family and, like, their parallels or the ways in which they have this, you know, a similar background is, I don't know, kind of heart-wrenching, you know?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that it got soiled, because I thought that Kenya's perspective was helpful in saying, you know, this is why I feel a certain way about what I'm hearing about what Marlo is experiencing because of my own experiences and my own feeling unwanted and feeling cast aside and the trauma that can impact and that you can carry with you as an adult. And Marlo's experienced that in her life too. I mean, certainly she is, I'm sure, dealing with the impact of what she experienced as a child, as an adult, and now she has these two children to take care of.
Yeah,
it's just unfortunate that it got soiled, and I don't know if that conversation will ever take place, but I just think how wonderful would it be, albeit incredibly unrealistic, if these two women could just, like, see each other even through their trauma and shared experience and just respect each other's experiences without trying to shame them.
Yeah.
Just even in that moment, like that moment with Kenya at the end of the reunion with Nini, where she said, listen, if only you and I, we have a lot more in common than, you know, we've even discussed, and like with what you said with your mom and what I've experienced with my mom, I thought that was an incredibly poignant moment. And I just don't know that we'll necessarily get that with Kenya and Marlo. And if that's appropriate, depending on where their relationship stands, how their relationship stands, if that's even real in any way realistic, but I think it would be quite a moment if it could happen. Maybe it'll be the reunion, because you know, Marlo's not going to be able to dictate who's on that call sheet. That's going to be a different kind of event. So we'll see. In the meantime, Damien Bellino, I'm so glad that we chat. I just feel like you do sometimes talk to me about how I can go on these Beverly Hills tangents. And I just love that we had an Atlanta-specific episode. I think that's wonderful.
Me too. I don't disagree that this is a minor season or a minor work. Mm, but I do think work. That, like, the soft that. Reset, which, again, I liked the most recent season of OC enough. And I'm enjoying this season of Atlanta even more than I did the OC, where it's like,
yeah,
I don't know that the stakes are not super crazy high, and it's not like the most perfect cast that we've had before, but it mm-hmm. does feel like they're on the right track to getting somewhere. So I'm enjoying it, and I appreciate you making space for us to chat about it. And who knew that I would be so down with Drew Sidora being such a mess?
Oh, my God. Who? Literally, who knew? You are riding that bench. Damien Bellino, you and Ralph. From where? Where did he go to college?
I think he went to Rutgers. I think he went to Rutgers, but
was and he was playing football
on the bench, okay. though.
Okay, but genuine question before we wrap: if you are on the football team but you never play, you can still say that you were. Oh, but you don't have a position.
Totally, I think she just called her to be like, "What position did you play again?" And he was "I was on the bench." I mean, I'm sure he did have a position that was like his. I mean, guess I don't really know anything about sports, but my guess is that he had a position that was like his, you know, number one position that he was best at, but. That he maybe didn't play a lot.
Didn't play it. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, great. Sports are wonderful. On a different note, guys, listen, we get into a little bit of a sporty, sporterson, whatever you would call it, things on the Patreon. Amazing hour-long episode. No sports are discussed. aside from the Olympic trials of unpacking Beverly Hills. Apologies to Sonia for that comparison. But it did also win 4 gold medals, that Patreon episode. Patreon.com/AndyScrolls. Number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes and invites to special Zoom kikis and more. And speaking of all things podcastery, Damien, tell the AGs a little bit about you might know her from and what you've got cooking over there with friend of the pod, Anne, as well.
You Might Know Her From is a pop culture podcast where we interview women and non-binary performers and sort of dig into their oeuvres and get to know all of the nitty gritty, you know, questions that maybe they haven't been asked before, projects that they hopefully were trying to brush under the carpet that we will for sure unearth. And we've interviewed hundreds of women, Kathleen Turner, Mary Kate Place, Kimberly Elise, Margaret Cho, Tashina Arnold, on and on and on, Eileen Davidson. So dig into our archives. We are on a little bit of a summer hiatus, but are releasing monthly right now. So go check out those episodes with Dot Marie Jones and Susie Nakamura now.
Love that. And where can people follow you on social?
You can find me wherever, you know, on all the things at Damien Bellino, and it's Damien with an A.
Amazing. And guys, follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Shout out to Atlanta. Thank you for an hour and a half in the driveway. Gave me a lot to think about and talk about. And I hope you guys enjoyed our less than 90 minute new record for us. Actual hour long app. My goodness. Wow. Responsibility. It's a matter of responsibility. I don't even know. Words are fun. Guys, hope you're all doing okay. And we'll chat with you soon. Bye-bye. Yeah.